streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Floyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening, and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, The Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes. As we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight, so stay tuned in to the hottest radio show worldwide.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we're right back at you, and today we got a great, great show, and we got a great guest that's not only going to educate you about some things and open your mind up to these better choices you should be making, but we're going to bring her right in, and she's going to formally introduce herself. Hello, and welcome to the show.
Hello, everybody.
All right. Formally introduce yourself, and we're going to go ahead and get started.
My name is Kassiana Fogish, and I am here to answer any questions and even talk about my experiences when it comes to the federal system. I am a convicted felon, first-time offender, drug offender. I was caught into a conspiracy. And I just would like to talk about my experiences, and hopefully if somebody hears my story or even the questions that are, you know, thrown at me today, if I can help somebody to make a better choice, that's what I'm here for.
Hey, we appreciate that. So we're going to go all the way to the beginning. Break it down to our viewers what your life was like coming up and then how you got involved with that conspiracy, but take it all the way back for us for a minute.
Well, I was born in Romania in 1981 in a communist country. Right after the Revolutionary War in our country in 1989, after the Berlin Wall went down, my parents came to the United States. So I am the child of immigrants, and I was an immigrant myself. Grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, just chasing the American dream, good student in school, had a good Christian background, and fast forward to wanting to do more in life and got into real estate, got into the music business, did other businesses along the way. And it was not till later on in life, I was 37 when I caught my charge. I never was in trouble before. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't have no substance abuse. What ended up happening, I was just in the music business around the wrong people at the wrong time. And I made a phone call, somebody introducing somebody to another person. And they ended up making a transaction when it comes to drugs, and that person was under investigation, so I ended up on a wiretap, and next thing you know, I'm dragged into a conspiracy, and next thing you know, I get 42 months in the federal system, 3 years probation, and I came home January 21st of 2020, got off probation a year and a half earlier. I did 6 months halfway house, and here I am just really telling my story. And what I really want to let the people know is it can happen to anybody. I never knew really about the prison system, the federal system, incarceration, and I just heard stories, but I never thought it would happen to me, number one. And number two, it can happen to anybody. Conspiracy can happen to anybody. And you're one move away from a conspiracy in the United States if you look at it, if you look at the way conspiracy works.
Okay. And with that, what you just said, let the people know how did that conspiracy happen? We know you made a phone call, but the people was under investigation. How did it that you get totally involved and end up doing prison time with that conspiracy? Elaborate on that for the people.
Well, the person that I introduced, he was in that world in the streets, and there was something missing in the street, and they were looking for somebody that had what he was looking for. And I knew the person, even though I was not dibbling and dabbling, I just made an introduction. I knew those type of people. And that's how I ended up in a conspiracy charge.
Wow. So you letting the people know right here today on the Streets and Love You Back radio show, it only take a phone call. You ain't got to be the one to make the transaction. But if you introduce someone to someone that's into that life, you go into prison as well.
Absolutely. And
is that accurate to say?
Absolutely. And me talking on the phone, I had no business talking about the things that I was talking about in the phone, naming certain things or even knowing these things. When people don't understand that even remotely talking about it, you can get caught into a conspiracy. There is no such thing as I don't know or I didn't know. I was in real estate. I was a real estate agent. But one thing is built guilty by association. Be careful who your friends are. And I'm not blaming them. I took the charge for myself. I did what I did. So at the end of the day, I can't blame. Nobody put a gun to my head and said, you need to make this call. I did it willingly, you know, never thought nothing of it. It was just a phone call. I don't care what y'all do after this phone call, but it's the things that I said on that phone call as well is what got caught me up. And next thing you know, I'm in a 100,000-page indictment.
Wow. So with that being said, you went to the prison system, did your time, didn't tell on nobody. You did yours.
Correct.
10 toes down and came on.
Correct.
Home, and now you're educating our youths and adults to making these better choices. Elaborate on that when it comes to our youth and adults.
Well, the biggest thing is telling my story, number one, because a lot of it took a shockwave to my family, to the community. I was a big activist in the community before I went to prison. So I was educating on financial literacy before I went to prison. Now I did something I was already doing. Look what happened to me. Guilty by association. And I failed my lie detector test because I wouldn't say certain things, and not because, oh, this is what it is and this is what it's not. It's I had to protect myself too, because these people don't care about you. What, the streets don't love you back and the feds don't love you back.
Correct. So let's take it back to when you first went in front of the judge and they gave you that kind of time. What did you say to yourself when they say you're going to go away for X amount of time? Well, how did that hit you?
I'm going to be honest with you. I know the prayers of so many in that moment. In that moment, I was in a state of shock. It didn't hit me till later. For him to go right down the middle in my sentencing guidelines, I was a first-time drug offender. And, you know, after the discovery, after they looked at everything, after they saw I was not a kingpin or a drug dealer and chased, you know, looked at my money and everything else, I really thought I was going to walk away with max a wiretap charge of a year. But they came into court and talked about how, you know, I failed my polygraph test and how, you know, they could have held me in contempt of court. Only by the mercy of God, I didn't get 8 more years tagged on to my sentence. And the judge just went down my sentencing guidelines, and down the middle was 42 months. Now looking back, I was so blessed because there was people in prison with my type of charge that got 10 to 25 years.
Wow. So now you done got this time, and now you're on your way to the Fed joint. Now you get to the Feds, and when do it sink in that I'm here for a minute?
I made up my mind before I went in, even though I was scared. I mean, I was Googling everything about how to do time in prison. I was watching movies. I was watching Orange is the New Black. And just a memo for everybody, prison is not like the entertainment world. It's the real deal. Going in, when I saw the barbed wire fences, the high wall, it hits you right when you get there. When that door slams behind you and you get that bedroll, you don't have to see nobody. You feel it. You know it. You're in prison. It's over with.
Wow. So now you're in here with all these women that you don't know from a can of paint. How do you deal with that situation every day, day in and day out? Explain that to the people.
Well, the biggest thing that I made up my mind that I was going to do my time in prison, I was not going to think of the outside. When you get locked up and you are doing time, you have to live in prison. You cannot think about what's going on outside. You can't think about anything else but doing your time, staying disciplined, finding a passion that you're, you know, my passion was the Word of God, and started reading a lot of books, did a lot of research. I was very involved in the church and on the compound, and I met some amazing ladies, developed great relationships. And I stayed to myself a lot. I did what I was supposed to do. Everybody knew I was in my lane. I didn't do the gossip. If somebody came to me and tried to tell me something about somebody else, I said, well, if we can't pray about it, I don't want to talk about it. So I stayed in my lane. I didn't pick a side. I didn't choose a side. I didn't choose a girlfriend. I didn't choose a boyfriend. I stayed to myself, and I still had my Christian sisters in Christ, and I just went to work. I had a routine. I stayed active in prison. I did not stay dormant because I didn't want my mind to wander. By the time I hit the bed, I was too tired. And get up early in the morning and go back at it again. I had to train my mind to live in prison, to stay in prison, and do my time efficiently. And I found out that I can paint and draw while I was in there. I took every class you can think of. My certificates were ample. Every class that you can think about taking, even classes that I knew already the information, I went and did it just because I wanted to stay active. And then once I transitioned to camp, I started teaching the classes myself, and then directed the choir in prison. Was just more in an active leadership role.
Wow, that's amazing that you went in with the mindset of, I can't let time do me. I have to do time, and I can't worry about the outside world. So that's a great thing that you put together for yourself. Now, what advice would you give these youth and adults about that lifestyle?
I have a made-up mind that progress could always take place no matter where you are in life. You are a constant student, and become a great listener. A lot of women that were locked up were their lifers, never going home. Have compassion in your heart. Nobody's perfect. And don't judge nobody. Don't judge you're in prison. You're a number, just like everybody else. So it doesn't matter. You know, I was there with the murderers, child molesters, and everything else. But I made up my mind that I was going to learn. And anybody that does time, two certain things that you want personal growth in, whether it's discipline spiritually, physically, you can work out and get your life in shape, but you have to have a routine. If you do not have a good routine, you will just do your time stressed out, sloppy, and you're like, okay, I had all this time to myself, regardless if you're in prison or not, and then you come home with nothing to show for it. The mental toughness, sometimes the emotional roller coaster that you go on while you're in there is also crazy. But I trained my mind. Your mind tells you sometimes how to feel and not feel. As soon as an emotion would come up that was not, that could have got me killed if I was going to overreact, or if somebody offended me, it didn't matter to me. I made up my mind that nothing offends me. Nothing, you know, if it does offend me, it's between me and my sisters in Christ, or I just hold it in. It's just something that I could not lose good days for nobody. I was going home. I made up my mind that I was coming home on time, if not early, and I stayed in a discipline role.
Wow, that's amazing. So my next question is, when you finally knew that gate was about to open to your freedom again, how did you feel when you first walked up out that gate?
I only knew a week ahead of time that I was coming home. They gave me 6 months halfway house, which was a shock. Not a lot of people got that. I was fortunate enough. I know God's grace and favor was on my life because I did not anticipate to come home 6 months early. And I had a week to prepare to come home. But when I walked out that gate, it was surreal. Again, it was a sense of numbness. I went straight to the halfway house from there. And it took an adjustment. It was an adjustment period. And 2 years later, it's still an adjustment period. Anxiety. I've had more anxiety coming home than I had in prison. And I've never suffered with anxiety. I think you have to be so strong in prison to just make it. When you come home, you might just crash and you're running on fumes because you have to heal. This is a transition period. And I have to tell myself, you know, the time that was lost, which was not a loss, it was actually a gain for me because I've learned so much. And looking back, it was a blessing in disguise. And coming home, I had to emotionally adjust, mentally adjust. Set in all of a sudden. It's just a emotional roller coaster because when you're going through pretrial and the uncertainty of not knowing which way you're going, what's going to happen. I had a real estate firm at the time. I didn't know if I was going to shut it down, keep it moving. I didn't know nothing. The uncertainty of not knowing would kill your mental. Then you go in prison physically. You have to do the time. Then you come home, it's just an emotional roller coaster. And just finding a balance and knowing that nothing happens overnight, rebuilding at 41 is challenging at times, but at the same time, wisdom is there now. Experience is there now. You just look at life a little bit different. Prison just gives you eyesight that most people would never understand unless they were locked up.
Correct. So at the time all this was going on, how was the relationship with the family when you was going through all this turmoil and then you finally got your time? How was the family relationship?
Family was great, very supportive. I had a whole community. I mean, I had to turn down letters. I couldn't turn in all the character letters that were being sent to me from – you know, politicians, church leaders, to the kids that I was helping in the community, to clients, past clients, to lawyers. I had a lot of character letters. Like I said, I didn't even turn in all the letters that I had because I knew the judge was not going to spend 100 hours reading through the whole box of letters that I had. So I had a great support system. A lot of people praying, just a lot of people praying. And I think me going through this was a testimony for the people around me, like my family, too. It brought our family closer during that time. And coming home, there have been a great support. And from my sister to my brother to my sister-in-law, mother, father, aunts, uncles, everybody's just been there. It's been a nonstop support. So I was fortunate enough to have that in my life.
And that's great because a lot of people, as we know, don't have that support system. Let's touch up on a little bit about your husband passing. Now, touch up on that for the viewers.
Well, I did my time. You know, I made plans to come home, work on my marriage because, you know, being away for 3 years, you don't know what's going on, not going on. He never served me divorce papers. I was blessed for that because plenty of women that got divorce papers served and did their time, you know, miserably thinking their husband left them. So I had that privilege again. But 87 days before I came home, my husband passed away of a heart attack in his sleep at 44 years old.
Wow. our condolences on that. So you coming home and then that happened, that was another blow to the heart. So tell the viewers, how did you deal with that emotional roller coaster on your way home to your husband passing?
The first day I found out the impact of it, it was like I couldn't even remember my social security because I had to make funeral arrangements from the prison because I was the wife. I had a sister-in-law that took care of a lot of things on the outside, but I still had to sign off papers. I had to, you know, get the guards to help me fax stuff out, and it was an emotional thing, but got through it. I didn't come home for the funeral, but coming home, that's when I started grieving. It didn't hit me till I saw his death certificate when I got to the halfway house, that it was real. And then driving around, looking at different places, for about 2-3 months, I just kept looking for him. I was thinking he was going to walk through a door somewhere.
Wow. So that was a heavy hitter right there. And mm-hmm. once again, like you said, a lot of other young ladies was getting divorce papers and doing their time, misery, and things like that. But once again, in your conversation, God had his hand on you through the whole prison bit. And then when you come home, he still had his hand on you, and he still have it on you today. So as of today, let the viewers know, what are you involved with now that the prison is behind you and you did your time, you have learned a valuable lesson from that. What's going on with you today, 2022?
Right now is just really telling my story and telling others about the mistakes, but that mistake doesn't have to define you. So it's different settings. Like if I'm in a church, I tell my road story, my testimony of how God was constant in my life. And then if it's a show like this where we have to talk about bring awareness to prison reform and bring awareness to people like me can be in prison as well. So it's really bringing awareness to the criminal justice system and the federal system of that, not being to be able to parole out or how things are in general. So different places, or if I go talk to the youth, I talk about financial literacy. I start with that because a lot of youth get in trouble, go out in the street and hustle, not knowing that there's other ways out here to do life, get your credit right. Don't get into bad debt. Get into good debt. You can own real estate at a young age. You can build a business, teaching them how to start a business. Because a lot of these kids, with the same hustle they have out there, or even adults doing something they're not supposed to be doing, they could be doing something right and becoming the next, you know, anything in this life. It's cool to do the right thing. You don't have to be anything. You don't have to be on TV to be a millionaire. You don't have to dribble a ball to be a millionaire or even a 100,000-aire. And not everybody is meant to have all that. But if you want that, you can do it the right way and knowing about business and paperwork and contracts. So it's a variety of things. No matter what setting I'm in, I can start with Jesus and talk about business, and then we can go to prison. So it depends on my audience on what I'm getting asked to do. So it's a variety of things. I would talk to anybody. I'll talk to a stranger. I can talk to anybody else.
Sounds like a winner. That sounds like a winner right there. And like I said, we thank you for definitely taking your time to come on the show. And when I reached out to you to be on the show and you did your research on our organization and then you came back and said, wow, you know, I would love to volunteer my time to you and your wife with what I do. Speak about that a little bit when you learned about our organization and what we do.
Well, the biggest thing is what I love is to see a husband and wife team doing this because it's important to hear from both sides. That's number one. And number two, the fact that you're giving the average person like myself an opportunity to tell our story. We don't have to be plastered on TV to tell our story. You know, the common people need to know our stories. I love the fact that you guys are reaching out to so many to do this, and you guys have been so consistent. I've done my research. I've read articles, and I read your Facebook pages, and I looked you guys up. And I am so touched by the fact that, you know, sometimes people don't see everything the day in and day out. They think this happened overnight. And why I wanted to, because I am in the digital space as well, I do a lot of graphic arts and work on people's logos, and that's part of the ministry as well, if I can help your social media presence for more people to know about you guys, because it's important to do what you guys are doing. You guys are talking to lawmakers. You guys are talking to parents. You're talking to children. You're talking to all aspects, and your work is not going to go in vain. And if you're saving one person's life, all this work you guys put in there is worth it.
We appreciate that so much. And any last words you would like to say to anybody, any shout-outs or anything you would like to give out?
Well, the number one shout-out is Jesus Christ. I thank him for everything he's done in my life. I want to shout-out my parents and sister and brother and sister-in-law for consistently being by my side and so many other people. And I want to shout-out to those that are left behind, and they're not forgotten, and you're not just a number, and you will be represented well by the way I live my life and by the way I tell you guys the stories. And never give up. You never know. You can wake up one day and be in freedom, and just stay consistent in the little things, and obedience is better than sacrifice. Be obedient in the small things, and it will add up to something big one day.
You said a mouthful right there, you know. And once again, we appreciate you coming on the show. You stay blessed, and we'll be back at you soon, and keep up the great work you're doing.
Thank you so much. Thank you, guys.
Have a great one.
You too, sir. Bye-bye.